copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What would your dad say if you arrived at his house in a new Rolls Royce? Said, "Dad, look at my new car." What would be your dad's reaction? Can you imagine it? Now, let me point something out here. Each one of you imagined a very different dad with a very different reaction. But what just happened was what I call a one-to-one communication. In other words, even though we've got a group here, I talked to you and it was your dad and your dad's response, etc. Does that make sense? Now, I'd like you to breathe in. Now I'd like you to resist what I'm going to tell you to do next. Breathe in. Can't resist me forever, can you? I say, you have to do what I'm asking you to do, even if you're drunk and don't want to. I had I watched a guy one night who was on television. He was a preacher on television. And he looked in the camera and he said, "Breathe in." And he just stopped. And I happened to be in a bar drinking a Coke, just watching what was happening in this bar. And I looked around and I thought, I recognized the preacher, and I thought I had a lot of time in the airport. And so I thought, I'm going to go in and watch. This was years ago. They wouldn't have preachers in a bar today. But I thought, wonder what people in the bar think of watching this guy on TV. And I don't drink at that time, so I was just sitting there with my Diet Coke or whatever, just watching people. Watch the evangelist, the televangelist, right? So I looked in the camera, he says, "Breathe in." And he steps back. And I realized that the drunkest person in the bar couldn't resist him forever. Just like you couldn't resist me forever, right? Sooner or later, they had to breathe in. And after he realized that he'd waited long enough and they had to breathe in, or they were getting rather exhausted with it, he looked at the camera and he said, "God is as close to you as the breath you just took in your lungs." That's one-to-one communication. Every person watching actually did what he said, but had a different set of lungs and had a different experience breathing. But it was one-to-one, even though it was a million people watching. Now, another story, situation. Let's say, for example, we get 10,000 people in the audience here today. And I put up a screen, a picture of a lady who is emaciated and dying with a baby. And I say to you, 80,000 people are dying every day of starvation in the world or whatever. And you have one reaction to that, right? You think, well, that's too bad. Sorry about that. You know, I'll have to give more next time at church or something. Let's change the headline just a little bit. What if I said, if this were your mother, how would you want Christians in the world to respond to her? And if you can literally imagine your mother being in that state, how would you want Christians to respond to her? Every one of you are imagining a different mother. But you're all addressing the question of how would you want that to happen? It's like it's almost like I'm talking to you one-to-one. There may be 10,000 people in the audience, but it's like I'm talking to you and you and your mother. And what I'm talking about is you. That's what I call one-to-one communication to the mass. Does that make sense to you, those three things? You'd know how your dad would operate with a Rolls Royce. You know, you'd know how you'd want your mother treated. You know, you would know, you breathed in. I say, that is how you communicate with a mass audience. You don't tell them, you basically have them experience something, and then once they've experienced it, you interpret what principles that you want them to know in relationship to that. But you don't just stand up and start teaching principles. Say, you ought to do this. Not talking at them, but with one-to-one, you can start talking with them. You can sort of realize what's happening in their dad or their mom or their whatever, and then teach the principles that you want to teach in relationship to their family. Not just talk at them. Does that make sense to you? I need to see your heads here. Yes? No? Okay. Now, so let me teach you the principles of how to do it then. Speaking with an audience of any size, you breathe in, live audience, media, one-to-one. Your first three sentences betray your agenda. Listen to this. Let me give you a little secret. Every speaker you ever hear for the rest of your life, you can tell them, you can tell in the first three sentences whether they're on your agenda or their own. First three sentences, you can tell it every time. If they start out, I'm so glad to be here tonight, they're on their agenda. If they start out, you never know what kind of problem I had getting here. The train didn't work and the car didn't work and this, but I'm sure, you know, it's like we finally made it. It's like it's their agenda. It's like if they start out with I, me, mine, they are on their agenda and they will stay on their agenda the rest of the night. If they start out with you, what is the greatest stress you've got right now in your life? Think about it. What's the greatest stress you've got for right now in your life? Let me teach you some of the principles as to how to deal with that. Do you feel the difference in it? If the first three sentences are really you-centered, they're there to help you. If the first three sentences are about I, me, mine, they're there to impress you. You can do it the rest of your life, every speaker you ever hear. And when you are the speaker, if you listen to your last three tapes, listen to the first three sentences, and you can betray your own agenda. You can find out what your own agenda was and ask if it wasn't true. You'll find it is. By the way, just as one thought, when you're trying to talk with people, not at them, I don't know where they taught it, in seminary or what, but a lot of pastors never look at you. They teach and preach like this. They actually, you know, make my opinion, and they look at a seat maybe or something, but they never look at you. You'll never see them make eye contact. We've got a pastor at the church we attend, it's that way. He gets up to give announcements or whatever. He never looks at you. Never looks at a person in the audience. And I've seen pastor after pastor after pastor after pastor in my life do that. I don't know why it is. I don't know if they teach it or if it's just natural. Naturally the way they're comfortable. I don't know what it is. But I'm saying, look at people. Talk to people. Not at them. Not at the walls. Talk to people. Number two, in writing to an audience of any size, including fund appeal letters, let me give you an assignment. When you go home, if you write appeal letters, or if you get appeal letters, do it either way, take a red, yellow, and green marker and go through it, and everything that's I, me, mine, circle it in red. Everything that's we, us, and you, meaning, or we and us, meaning both of us, circle it in yellow, which is partly self-centered and partly you-centered. Anything that, anytime the word you is used, circle it in green and see what the letter looks like from there. I've had appeal letters come to me where I've done that with, I actually sat down with clients and I'd show them, I said, let me see your last appeal letter. Let me show you how this works out in appeal letters. one of them had 53 reds and one green. You know what the green was? We would sure appreciate your financial support. Right? Here's our minister. Here's what we're doing worldwide. And we'd sure appreciate your financial support. I say, try it on your appeal letter. See how you're coming across to people. See how people that are appealing to you are coming across to you. Is it all about you, or do you see? Basically, people will give you token gifts because you ask for them if they like you and trust you. They won't give you large gifts unless you are doing what they want to do but can't do it without you. So unless the writer knows what you want to do, how can they appeal to you, really, other than token gifts? So what you're trying to figure out is, what you're trying to figure out with large donors or donors in general is, what do they want to see done in the world? Do they want to see children fed? Do they want to see people educated? What do they want to see people evangelized? What do they want to see happen that they can't get done? They can't do it. They don't know how to do it. They're not in a slum where they can do it. It's like they cannot do it. They want to see it done. They have a burden of compassion to see it done, but they can't do it. But you come along and show them what you are doing, and that is in alignment with what they would want to do. Here's you. And what you're doing is in clear alignment with what they would want to do if they could. They'll give you money. If they trust you, they'll give you money. But if you come along and try to tell them, here's what we're doing, and therefore you should give to us, it's off here, they may give you a token. They're not going to give you any real money. And particularly if it's like, you know, it's like what we're doing is this way and what they want to see done is that way, they give you $10, they won't give you $10,000 or $100,000. I don't care how much they like you, they won't give you a lot of money unless what you're doing is what they want to see done. They won't. But in the appeal letter, you can see how self-absorbed they are and how insensitive they are as to what your agenda is. And what you're doing when you're writing an appeal letter is you're trying to communicate the fact that you know what they want done. Have you ever wanted to feed? How would you like someone to respond to your mother if she were in this situation? Is this something you would like to do, but there's simply no way to do it? Well, we are doing it in 73 locations and blah, blah, blah. What you're trying to figure out is, what do they want to see done that they can't do without you? And they see you as a conduit to do it, they'll give you money to do it. Critiquing another's communication style, again, red, yellow, green. And then relating one-to-one with a friend. Communicating is not just telling your latest on the topic. When you're communicating with people, it isn't just waiting for them to stop so that you can tell what you're doing on the subject. It is actually asking them questions and listening to their answers and asking them more questions to listen to more answers. If you would red, yellow, and green your own conversations, think back on your own conversations with friends, relatives, etc. How many I's are in there? Well, I went to the... you never believe I had... how many I's are in there compared to what did you experience? What are you experiencing? What are you feeling? What are you... You know, it's like... Is your natural conversation very I-centered, or is it very other-centered? By the way, a lot of couples deal with the question of intimacy and intimate conversation, etc. Let me show you what intimate conversation is, because a lot of people, a lot of wives especially, have said to me over the last 35 years, we don't have any intimacy in our marriage. And the husband says, what do you mean? We have sex three times a week or three times a day or whatever. But he doesn't understand what she's really saying. And let me show you what intimacy really is. If this is a person, not a loaf of bread, a keyhole, or a mushroom, this is a head and a body. If this is you, we all have three selves. We have a public self that everyone sees. We have a private self that only you have seen in private, only friends see in private. And we have a personal self that only we have ever seen. This is what Scripture refers to as your heart. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Not how does he look to the public, not even how does he look to the friends, but as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now, when you've got another person you're communicating with, they also have a public, a private, and a personal self. And they also have this in the private self, they have a heart. As that person is in their heart, so are they. Now, we all know what sexual intimacy is, and like that, where a part of a person goes in another part of a person. But for emotional intimacy, what it is that this person says, all right, I will let you past what the public sees and past even what other friends have seen and tell you things that no, I've never told anyone else. Let me share my heart with you. I will tell you things that no one has ever heard before about me, about what I think, what I feel, what I'm experiencing. And if the other person says, you've bared your heart, but all I get is a steel wall over here to see what the public sees, that's where a wife says, we have no intimacy because I will let him into my heart, but he won't let me into his heart. But when the wife shares this or the husband shares this, and as a result, the other companion said, let's pass the private self, or the public self, the private self, and into that person's heart, that's a heart-to-heart conversation. That's an intimate conversation. Just sort of for what it's worth on the subject of communicating. And then listening to hearts. The ability to basically keep asking questions. One of the things I've come to see is that every person has 100,000 words they would like to spill out. There's pressure areas. There's something they would like to share if they had a relationship of trust and the person would ask the right questions. If there's a relationship of trust and you ask a person the right questions, 100,000 words come out. What you're doing is listening to their heart on a subject. Do you listen to hearts or do you listen to experiences? You're listening to what experience did you have at the raceway or did you are listening to how do you feel about this? How do you personally think or feel? Or what do you experience in this area? What in your heart is what you're really trying to get at, frankly? Well, we're done. We'll ask questions. But what I'd like to do is make sure that you have the ability to talk to people one-to-one, not only personally, but in an audience of a million. Isn't that an interesting concept? Questions. What questions do you have about that? It's not an easy concept, by the way, to grab right off. I told this to an advertising agency the other day, their whole creative team. And they said, oh, this is fantastic. This is going to change our way of doing it. The next letter I got, the next newsletter I got, it wasn't close to understanding it at all. It takes a while to grab it. But once you can understand that, breathe in. If it were your mother, and how would your dad respond? It gets you a long ways to understanding the concept. What questions do you have about it?
So if you could summarize very shortly about this concept, so how you would summarize this concept of
life's
community?
To To summarize the concept, how would I summarize the concept? The concept is 1 to 1 to 1 million, or what I call you focus. But how I would communicate it in a simple way, which I think what you're really asking, it's difficult. Even as I was preparing to talk today, I realized it's very difficult to really get it, to communicate it. That's why I thought to illustrate it three ways helps you experience it, but then how do you actually go about doing it? And I think, to me, the breakthrough was the breathe-in concept. Breathe in. Take it. Breathe in. That was the starting point of all of it. If you'll study, what does breathe in mean to you? I think it'll be the most helpful. This gentleman just wrote a book. Peter wrote a book called Out of Ashes. Now, let's say you're going to write a book. The question becomes not, here's what I experienced out of ashes. What you're trying to figure out is, how can I start the book with what they've experienced, not what I've experienced? Like, where has tragedy happened in your life? Where is anxiety in your life? What is the worst thing that's ever happened to you? Let me show you the principles on how to deal with that. So that basically that person is taking the subject you've got, like stress or pain, and they're imagining that pain in their own world. I guess that's the best way to put it. It's like help the audience imagine the subject in their world. Okay? Help the audience imagine the subject. Each person in the audience, here's a better way to say it. Help each person in the audience imagine the subject applied to their world. If it's suffering, if it's victory, whatever it is, help them. How would your dad, deal with you seeing you in a real Rolls Royce? If this were your mother, help every individual you're talking to, one or a million, imagine the subject in their world. And then help them apply the principles you want to that help deal with that subject. But always start with their world, not your world. Because unless you can get into their world, and the beauty is, by asking questions, using the word you, it can let every person be in their own world immediately. Like, how would your dad, well, every person is imagining the success, the father-son relationship, the father-daughter relationship, they're imagining it in their own world. On that subject, and then say, let me teach you some of the principles of dealing with father jealousy or father not accepting you or whatever the subject is. But if you can help each person imagine it in their world on a 1 to 1 million basis, then the principles, which are applicable on a, it's like principles are true no matter where they're applied, then you've got real strong communication because they imagine their world situation and they imagine the principles apply to them. By all means of logic, it would be one of the most powerful things you could give them because you've actually talked to them. It's their world that you're applying universal principles to their world situation. And that's when you got, you're talking 1 to 1 with a million people. It feels like the person is talking to me because I keep applying it to the way my dad, I keep imagining my dad and how he would respond and what the principle would be. That's the basic essence of it. Good question. Good question. Oh, good answer. Thank you. What's even a better question? Other questions? I tell you, you try it on your last appeal letter, it'll...
She could actually benefit from by sharing.
How do you encourage people to share their heart? I'm not sure I'd ever do that. What I'd focus on is not how do I help you share your heart. I'd focus on how do I build more trust. If The way you get to the person where they can share their heart is to build a trust in the relationship. And once there's trust, the more trust there is, the more of their heart they can share. Part of the reason that they can't share their heart is because they don't trust. A person finds it very difficult to share their heart is because they've shared it and been hurt so many times. They trust in an environment, and the environment hurt them. So they realize that they just pull back and stop sharing because they don't know who to trust. So the more you can establish trust, the more of that heart you're going to see. So if I got a person that couldn't share, couldn't be open, I'd ask the question, my recurring question would be, how do I help that person develop trust in our relationship? And then a second thing I would do, whatever you affirm, you'll get more of. Whatever you affirm, you'll get more of. When a person does share something, you say, that was really helpful. That was really good. I really appreciate the way you did that. You did that just the right tone. That was perfect. If you affirm the baby step, they'll take more steps. But if you say, why are you sharing something like that? In other words, if you criticize what they did do, they'll do even less of it. The question is, how much does introvert, extrovert play in this kind of a situation? Introvert, extrovert plays a lot in all communication. Let me share with you a way to talk to an introvert, to let them share their heart, have them write it out. Because if they're an introvert, it's often very difficult for them to verbalize what they're experiencing. But if you'll say, I tell you what, would you mind writing out what you're feeling or thinking right now? And I'll do the same, and let's read to each other that. Introverts can read what they've written, but they can't say what they're thinking. It's difficult. It's true of introvert extroverts, and it's true even of two extroverts on emotional topics. To be able to write out what you've written on an emotional topic, it's a lot easier to read what you're feeling than to say it. And it's really unlocked a lot of people to do that.